On February 3rd, 1959, American rock and roll musicians Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the big bopper J.P. Richardson were killed in a plane crash near Clear Lake, Iowa, together with pilot Roger Peterson, who was 21. The event later became known as the Day the Music Died, after singer-songwriter Don McLean referred to it as such in his 1971 song you just heard, American Pie. It's a very strange, sad story, but in a moment, Susan Massino joins us to talk about the Buddy Holly curse, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Susan Massino with us. Susan is an author, rock and roll historian. She's been on our program a number of times. She appears in the Van Halen DVD, The Early Years, AC/DC's DVD, Let There Be Rock. Susan's latest release is a revised and updated edition of The Secrets of the Universal Laws, Past Lives, Ghost Adventures, and More that delves into the synchronicity and manifestations, healing with light, numerology, past lives, and also ghost adventures. She has participated in ghost investigations in numerous locations, including the Green Door Brothel in Deadwood, South Dakota, Gettysburg, and the famed Bobby Mackey's Music Hall in Wilder, Kentucky. Several of her books include Famous Wisconsin Musicians, The Story of AC/DC, Rock and Roll Fantasy, My Life and Times with AC/DC, Van Halen, and Kiss. You've been all over the place, Susan.
I have, George. Hello.
And welcome back.
Thank you. I always love being on your show, so thanks for asking me.
Every time I hear that song, American Pie, I think of that tragedy that occurred 61 years ago now, where all kinds of things happened. I mean, in the synchronicities of who would get on the plane, who would not. What a story. And that contributes. Go ahead.
Very, very sad, but very fascinating at the same time.
It truly is. What is the curse of Buddy Holly?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about this for a long time, and they call it a curse, and I'm not sure if that would be the proper word for it, but I believe that because of the loss of the big bopper, Ritchie Valens, and Buddy Holly, three of the biggest music stars in the 1950s.
At that time, that's right.
Exactly, yeah. Losing them like that so suddenly, imprints on to where it happened, to the people it happened to, the families that, you know, had to go through that. And it seems to me, with all the research I've done, that so many people that had personal contact with Buddy, worked with Buddy, even, you know, came to sing for the band once Buddy was gone, they were all died. They all died very strangely. Car crashes, plane crashes, suicides. Very sad. And it's hard to, you know, to try to figure out, like, is it a curse or is it a repetitive thing because of, you know, the pain that it caused in the first place? I'm not sure.
Or was it just bad luck?
I think it's more than bad luck because, as I found, that all the people that died that night, they all had premonitions of their own death. Buddy Holly was even warned by a producer named Joe Meek that he had gone to a tarot reading in England the year before, and he called Buddy and told him that this tarot card reader said, February 3rd, Buddy Holly dies. And he called him from England in 1958 and told Buddy this. And Buddy laughed it off because it was past February already. And he said, well, you know, don't have to worry about that. And the very next February 3rd is when he died.
Well, and it was all strange where, like, Ritchie Valens had a coin toss, and he won the seat. And he didn't want to take the bus, so he got on the plane. Waylon Jennings, who is now dead, but he was scheduled to be on that little plane, he got off it, and I think he gave his seat to the Big Bopper, didn't he?
Yes, he did. They were sick. I mean, they were on a bus that kept breaking down, and it was bitter cold, you know, Midwestern Iowa, Wisconsin, all of that. And the Big Bopper actually had gotten the flu. So Waylon Jennings gave up his seat to the Big Bopper.
In the movie, I believe it's the Buddy Holly story, in the movie they had Richie Valens as having the flu. Was he sick too?
I don't think he was sick. I just think they were all, like, freezing to death.
Yeah.
It was miserable.
Well,
very miserable.
Soon after takeoff, late at night, in very poor wintry weather conditions in the Midwest, the pilot lost control of the light aircraft, which was a Beechcraft Bonanza, those of you who know little planes, subsequently crashed into a cornfield. Everyone on board was killed. The pilot was only 21 years old.
Exactly. And Buddy was only 22. Richie was 17.
Jeez.
And the Big Bopper was 28.
And the Big Bopper's big song. He was a DJ, and he came up with a song called Chantilly Lace that put him to stardom, right?
Yes, yes. He was a very popular DJ, and he did have a couple of hit songs, Chantilly Lace and another one that I like. Like I said, I have so many notes on the band and all the people involved with it. But he was very popular and well-liked, great guy on tour, didn't read anything about him that wasn't good. So he was seemed to be a great guy, and he did have a big hit with that song.
Now, what was the Buddy Holly curse, Susan?
The Buddy Holly curse was, like I said, I think it imprints somehow.
I mean, if the curse happened before the plane crash, right?
Exactly, yes, yes. They all had premonitions of their own deaths. Richie Valens, as you might have seen in the movie La Bamba, he had a fear of planes, and he had to go to his grandfather's funeral one day, and the day that he was not at school, a small plane crashed into the actual playground.
Into the playground. That's right. He kept seeing that vision of it, too.
Yes, yeah. So he did not like to fly at all. And Buddy and his wife, Maria Elena, both had a dream on the same night, which is really, really creepy. She dreamed that she was standing in a field, and she saw this big, fireball out of the sky that just exploded and made a big hole in the ground. And the next day, Buddy woke up and told her that he dreamed that he was on a plane with himself and his brother and his wife, and they dropped her off on the top of a building and said, "We'll be back to get you."
Oh, my God.
So they all had premonitions.
Didn't a band member make a funny joke comment to Buddy Holly before he took the flight? What did he say?
Oh, yes. He said, well, it was Waylon Jennings. And I think Buddy was teasing him because he had lost his seat on the plane. He gave it up to the Big Bopper.
Right.
And he mentioned, he said something like, "Well, I hope your old bus breaks down," and Waylon shot back, "Well, I hope your old plane crashes."
Oh, my God. That must have haunted him for years
It did. He never forgave himself for saying it, and it did affect him. It really did.
My gosh.
Very sad.
And why did they take a plane anyway, Susan?
Well, they were on this bus that I have looked through their tour, and, I'm from Wisconsin, and they were up in Wisconsin doing several dates. Actually, they were in Green Bay, Wisconsin the night before they played the Surf Ballroom, and they were driving in very severe weather all the time, and some of the dates were up to 500 miles apart from each other. And the bus kept breaking down. The heat kept not working. People were getting sick. Even after the crash itself, the drummer, Carl Bunch, was hospitalized for frostbitten feet from being on the bus. So the bus was not working out well at all. It turned out to be a very miserable way to travel.
There were the performers who were at the event at the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, Iowa, and it was freezing. If you're not from the Midwest, those winters on those flat plains are very, very cold. So I can imagine those people were just, really freezing, especially with the bus condition that it was in.
Oh, I know. And the heat itself kept breaking down. So they, you know, the bus would break down and the heat would go off, and it was a mess, you know, and Big Bopper was sick, and they were tired too. I mean, they were almost playing every other day or almost every day. Just as I said, some were up to 300 miles apart from each other and 500 miles apart. So it was very grueling. And what I also found out too is that if Buddy would have been being paid properly for what he had already accomplished, he wouldn't have needed to go on that tour.
Well, that's a good point. Because he was a superstar at that time, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
But he wasn't making the kind of superstar money he should have.
Exactly. And that there's a lot of speculation that his manager was not as honest as he should have been. And his new wife, he just got married 6 months before this. His new wife, Maria Elena, was about two weeks pregnant when he went on the plane that night. And she blamed herself. He wouldn't let her come along because she had just started getting morning sickness. And she kept saying in a lot of interviews that I found that if she would have been there with him, they never would have got on a plane.
And she ended up having a miscarriage because of all the stress after the plane crash.
Exactly. And right after, they called it psychological trauma. And she lost the baby right after the accident happened.
Suzanne, who was Eddie Cochran?
Okay, Eddie, here I'm looking through my notes here. Eddie Cochran was a guy, a musician, who was supposed to be on that tour. So he kind of, you know, in a way, I think he felt guilty that he wasn't there.
Was he a singer star by himself, or was he in a group?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, he was a singer performer, and I'm looking up here on. I know what happened to him, but he felt really guilty about not being on the flight or not being there for Buddy. And the following year, in April of 1960, Eddie Cochran, his girlfriend, who was a songwriter, Sharon Sheely, and she had written Poor Little Fool for Ricky Nelson and, you know, written a lot of hit songs, and they were with Gene Vincent, another rock and roll star back in the 50s. They were on their way to London's Heathrow Airport to return to California. And on the way to the airport, their car suffered a blown tire. It put the car into a spin out of control, smashed into a light pole, and Eddie Cochran was thrown from the car and killed instantly.
Jeez.
And that was just a little over a year after Buddy died.
I mean, and this was happening to people over and over again. Strange connections with the people. Somebody committed suicide too. He was so depressed about all this. Who was that?
Yes. Well, there are a few. The first, what I did was I kind of put it into a chronological order because there's so many people involved in this. So that happened in April 17th, 1960 is when Eddie Cochran died. And then in October of 1962, Waylon took over singing for a while after Buddy was killed. And of course, they kept the Winter Dance Party tour going because, you know, you got to make money. And they hired a singer called, his name was Ronnie Smith, and he replaced Buddy. He continued the remainder of the tour, and in, 1962, he was committed to a state hospital in Texas for drug abuse and hung himself at the age of 24.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, this is almost like the curse of the 27 Club. You've heard of that one.
And that's a long story there, too. It's amazing how all this, you know, comes together. And, you know, I wanted to find out who Buddy Holly's influences were because he was, you know, one of the first rock and roll pioneers. And he actually loved Hank Williams Sr., which makes sense because Hank, you know, rocked out in his own way. And that was one of the people that Buddy Holly loved to listen to.
Wasn't there another plane crash in 1963?
Yes. The next the next thing that would happen is Cowboy Copas, who was a Nashville star, he had done a 14-date tour with Buddy Holly, Hank Thompson, and George Jones. He was actually returning from a benefit for the widow of Cactus Jack Call, a local disc jockey who had died in a crash. He was riding in a single propeller Piper Comanche with fellow musicians Hackshaw Hawkins and Patsy Cline. The pilot Randy Hughes lost visibility and went down about 70 miles north of Nashville.
Is that the plane crash that killed Patsy Cline?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
That was March 5th, 1963.
What does that tell you about these little planes, Susan? Jeez.
I don't like them. I really recommend no one to fly in them unless they're just doing something very safe. But, again, we see even this horrific accident that involved Kobe Bryant and his daughter
tragic.
And seven other people.
So sad.
They should never have taken off that day because of the weather.
They should never have been given clearance.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the same thing with Buddy Holly. It was bad weather. The pilot was only trained in sight flying and not with his
instruments.
He wasn't that.
Right. And we're talking 61-year-old technology, which wasn't that sophisticated.
Exactly. Yes.
What happened in 64 with the original Crickets?
Okay. The original Crickets were.
That was part of Buddy's group, right?
Yeah, the original ones, Jerry Allison, Joe B. Maudlin, and Sonny Curtis. And they continued as a group and brought in 17-year-old David Box to replace Buddy Holly. Now, Box was born in Texas and joined the Crickets in 1960. He did a couple of recordings with them that didn't go over well. It's hard to replace Buddy Holly, let's put it that way. And on October 23rd of 1964, David Box hired a Cessna Skyhawk 172 to fly to a show in Harris County, Texas. He and his drummer and his guitar player left right after the show, and shortly after takeoff, the Cessna nosedived into the ground, killing all three passengers.
Oh, my God. Now, these are people who just had some kind of relationship with Buddy Holly or something. It just seems like everybody who had some their lives touched by Buddy Holly, something tragic happened to them.
Pretty much, yes. Yes. Even doing all this research, I haven't played his music because I'm kind of creeped out. Because when I started doing this research, he definitely is popping up. I'm having, all week long I had people sending me text messages and stuff saying, I just heard something about the Buddy Holly curse, and I thought of you.
Jeez.
And tonight, actually, I'm in Savannah, Georgia, and I was out, and I had said a prayer to the gentlemen that lost their lives, and I said, it's a shame down here that we never hear any of your music. And right after I thought that, this car dealership in Savannah, which is illegally using this, but they did a commercial to the melody of La Bamba.
It's everywhere.
On the radio.
Susan, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about this sort of strange curse with all kinds of strange things that have happened. And even Gary Busey, who played Buddy Holly in the movie, something happened to him, too. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on the first Sunday of every month, we highlight emerging artists, great talent from all over the world, that submit CDs to us and music, and we play their bumper music for the first couple hours.
We do indeed.
On the first Sunday of every month. And, Tom, you're looking for more emerging artists.
We are always. So if you have some music out there, you want to send it in, all you need to do is go to the coasttocoastam.com website. In the search, just type in emerging artists. And when you get there, you'll get a link and tells you exactly what to do to submit your music. And each month we'll pick about seven of them. Each month, and we'll play them.
That's right. You'll see a story about emerging artists, and then right underneath it, it says click here, and it'll give you an address to send Tom the information.
That simple.
Do you prefer little CDs, or how do you prefer?
We prefer thumb drives, if possible.
Oh, really? You're into that now?
Yeah, okay. It's a lot easier than having CDs. Super. But, you know, however you get your music here is great.
Emerging artists. So just send them in, and you might be on the program. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Susan Messino with us. Her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Been going through this list for the last couple days, Susan. It's really uncanny how many people have succumbed one way or another just by being influenced by Buddy Holly.
It is very creepy, I have to say. I actually did the timeline to go so for us to follow, but I didn't include everybody. There's like another 20 people.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, it's just really amazing and extremely creepy.
What's the story of Crickets guitarist Sonny Curtis?
Okay, let's see here. Yeah, I wanted to say quick too, out of the respect to Eddie Cochran. His hits were 20 Flight Rock and Summertime Blues.
That was a great song.
Yeah, it was. It was. And so I wanted to put that in there. But so Sonny Curtis in 1965, the Crickets provided Bobby Fuller, who is another, you know, he was another artist. And he was really, you know, having a hard time getting a hit song. And Fuller was given a song called I Fought the Law.
That was a big hit.
It was. It went into the top 10. And he also, the last song that he ever recorded, Buddy Fuller, was Love's Made a Fool of You, which was written by Buddy Holly. And his story is one of the weirdest stories, an unsolved mystery after decades. In the early morning hours of July 18, 1966, Bobby Fuller received a phone call in Hollywood in his apartment that he shared with his mother, and he got into his Corvette and took off. Or actually, he bypassed his Corvette and took his mother's car. And he didn't come back. Then by the next morning, his mother asked his road manager to look for her car. And at 5 p.m. that day, the car mysteriously appeared in the driveway. When she went to the car to check on her son, she found Bobby Fuller lying across the seat. He'd been badly beaten. Blood was caked on his shirt, pool of blood on the floor.
Jeez.
He was covered with gasoline, and they found gasoline in his stomach.
He obviously didn't drive to the driveway.
No, not at all.
Somebody did and planted it there.
They never figured it out. They didn't dust for fingerprints. They ruled it as a suicide. And it's never been solved.
Jeez. And again, another person who was influenced by Buddy Holly.
Right, and actually recorded one of his songs.
Who was the music producer, Joe Meek? What happened to him?
Okay, Joe Meek is the one that he was a friend of Buddy's, and he's the one that called Buddy in 1958 to tell him what the tarot reader had told him. Well, because he gave Buddy that message, and it happened the very next February 3rd. He was convinced that there was no way he was going to live long. He pretty much knew that he wasn't going to live that long at all.
He was only in his 30s, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And on February 3rd, 1967, at the age of 37, he committed suicide in his studio after shooting his landlady dead.
My gosh.
And that was Joe Meek.
I'm glad I never met Buddy Holly.
I'm afraid to play his songs, to tell you the truth.
Oh, we've been playing them. They're,
I know.
All right. Now, the group T-Rex, there's a guy named Mark Bolan. He died in a car crash, right?
Right, yes. Mark Bolan from T-Rex, which was, he's a great band. And he was in a terrible car accident, was killed on September 16, 1977. And in the rubble of the car, they found a button, and it said, every day is a holiday.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
All right, Gary Busey, who's been on our program before, we've even done some TV pilots with him, starred in the Buddy Holly story. And he almost got killed First of all, the guy who wrote the screenplay was Robert Gittler. He committed suicide, didn't he?
Yes, 2 days before the Buddy Holly story premiered.
My God.
He committed suicide.
And then Busey gets into a horrible motorcycle accident that almost kills him.
Yes, he was 10 years later that he was in that accident, but he wasn't wearing a helmet. And he suffered permanent brain damage, and when he was on the operating table, he died. And in 2005, he told Larry King that Gary Busey said, "I was surrounded by angels, and they don't look like they look like on Christmas cards. They're big balls of light that float and carry nothing but love and warmth."
Now, who was Keith Moon, Susan?
Okay, Keith Moon was the drummer of The Who, for The Who.
Okay.
Crazy guy. You know, there's so many fun stories about Keith Moon. But he had gone out with Paul and Linda McCartney to see the London premiere of the Buddy Holly story on September 6, 1978.
My gosh.
He went back to an apartment that belonged to Harry Nilsson in Mayfair in England, and this is the same apartment that Mama Cass Elliot died 4 years prior.
She choked to death or something, didn't she?
Well, actually, I just saw the autopsy reports. They did a show, and it was a heart attack.
She had a heart attack. Jeez.
Yeah.
What happened to Keith Moon?
But what happened with Keith is, so he goes out and he sees the Buddy Holly story with Paul and Linda McCartney, and he goes back to the apartment, and he's taken a sedative to keep him from drinking booze, and, you know, he has bouts of alcoholism and mania, so he's taking this drug. He woke up the next day at 7:30, ate something, drank something, and took more of the sedative. In a few hours, short hours later, Keith Moon was dead. He was pronounced dead on September 7th, 1978, which was Buddy Holly's birthday.
Jeez, oh my God. And, of course, one of our favorites, Ricky Nelson from Ozzy and Harriet fame. What happened to him? He died in a plane crash.
Yes. There is so much with the Ricky Nelson story that we could, you know, probably do a show on him some night.
Now, what's his Buddy Holly connection?
Well, he met Ricky Nelson only met Buddy Holly once, but Gene, I'm mixing up my guys here. Eddie Cochran, was his boyfriend, and she wrote Ricky Nelson the number one hit "Poor Little Fool," which completed a link between Nelson, Holly, Eddie Cochran, and Richie Valens, because they had all gotten songs written by her. In 1979, Ricky Nelson recorded "Rave On" and "True Love Ways," both written by Buddy Holly. They would be released after Ricky Nelson's death. His last performance was in Guntersville, Alabama, on December 30th, 1985. After the show, Nelson and the band got onto a reconditioned DC-3 that had been turned down by Leonard Skinner, who also suffered some people didn't make out or make it through their airplane crash. But back in 1985, Ricky Nelson's plane, a fire broke out in the cabin, and they made an emergency landing into a field in Texas, and they were pretty much, they died of smoke inhalation.
Jeez.
And that was on New Year's.
How unlucky for all of them. Then there was, of course, and we still play his bumper music a lot, Del Shannon.
Oh, and Del, what a sad story. I mean, he's one of, besides the how strange Bobby Fuller died, Del Shannon was a great, you know, rock and roller in the 60s. He had his hit "Runaway." Other hits were "Hats Off to Larry," "Little Town Flirt." But after the Beatles came in, he kind of, you know, faded a bit. And in the late 1980s, Del Shannon was attempting to come back. Tom Petty had worked with him and even included me and Del were singing "Little Runaway" in Tom Petty's "Running Down a Dream." And even though Shannon's career had been rekindled, he suffered severe bouts of depression. His last performance at the Surf Ballroom on February 3rd, 1990, was the 31st anniversary of the Holly plane crash, and his backing band that night were the Crickets. Del Shannon returned home, and on February 9th, 1990, took out a shotgun and took his own life.
Ah, my gosh.
And he was unaware of the fact that he was going to be asked to take over for Roy Orbison's place in the traveling
show. My God, what a great honor that would have been.
Well, that would have turned everything around for him.
My gosh. And then, like you said, there's 20-some others, but there's the last one. We've got Michael Welsh. Tell us about him.
Well, I forgot to put one in the middle, which is this is predates the very last one. On February 3rd, 2003, Phil Spector, the famous music producer, is known for the Wall of Sound. Or Wall of Sound, his production skills. He was influenced by Buddy Holly, and he shot that girl to
That's
death
right.
in his house.
He's still in jail, isn't he?
Yes, he is, yes, on February 3rd of 2003.
And then
the last person, Michael Welsh from Weezer, they gained fame with their debut album with the hit song Buddy Holly. And Welsh left the band due to a nervous breakdown and was found dead in a hotel room at the age of 40.
My God. Now, Susan, you got to admit, this defies odds and probability. This is way beyond coincidence, which I don't think exists. Something's happening here.
Yeah, like I said, it's like when I started researching these guys, they are popping up all over the place. I think they're aware of when, you know, people commemorate the tragedy of losing them. And they definitely have been making their presence known. So
why would the knowledge of Buddy Holly, knowing Buddy Holly, turn into death for so many people? I mean, what is it about Buddy Holly that might contribute to that?
Yeah, you know, that I've been thinking about that all week because...
He wasn't a bad guy, was he?
Oh, no. He was a wonderful young man. And, I've been thinking about that and thinking that I think that because of how they died and how loved they were, that left an imprint on anything connected to them. You can find the same thing with James Dean after he died in a horrible car accident in... September of 1955.
Well, and they sold some of the car parts from that tragedy, and they were haunted.
Yes, then people were dying because they had parts of his car in theirs.
Yes. Strange.
So I'm, you know, just like a residual haunting, which is kind of a loop that comes around, like on the anniversary of a death or that sort of thing. And by the way, Buddy has been seen many times at the Surf Ballroom.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Just like hanging around?
Yes, he makes an appearance there. I actually have a story from my friend Tamara Gleason, and also I got some info from Chad Lewis, who you've had on the show many times.
Right.
And he was just down at the Surf Ballroom, and the night that my friend Tamara was there with her sisters, a few years back now, they went to see a band, and there was a gentleman that was dressed exactly like Buddy Holly. And they kind of giggled about it, like, well, does he think he's going to pick up chicks looking like that? Or, you know, it was just kind of funny, and he was standing next to, very right on the edge of the stage, right in front of the band, watching the band. And pretty soon, you know, after the show was over, they looked around, they never saw him leave. So they asked some of the employees, and at first the employees didn't really want to talk about it.
Oh, my gosh. It happens all the time, doesn't it?
Exactly. The ticket lady said she never saw anyone come in looking like Buddy Holly. But then when they pressed him more for answers, they admitted that Buddy often shows up at the Surf Ballroom, and if he really likes the band, he'll stand right next to the stage.
And everybody can see him?
Well, I know my girlfriend and her sisters saw them, but then, like I said, the ticket lady didn't see him. So it's interesting. Like, did everybody see him or just certain people could see him?
Susan, you cover a lot of stories with different groups. This story of the Buddy Holly episodes with all these deaths and tragedies that surround it. How would you categorize that? As just one of the bizarre stories of all times, or what?
Oh, definitely. I think it's one of the rock and roll curses. You know, started all the way back in 1959 when rock and roll, you know, was just starting out.
But I wonder who put what curse on Buddy before all this happened.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't know that, do we?
Yeah, I mean, we don't. And the fact that...
Well, what did he do or something like that? Did he offend somebody?
You know, he was warned, you know, by the tarot reader in England from Joe Meek, who had called him and everything. And what bothers me more is that they all had premonitions, especially Buddy and his wife. Why did he get on a plane then? It doesn't make any sense.
Especially a plane like that during that kind of inclement weather.
Exactly. It was just, why? You know, I've been asking that for a couple weeks now. Why? Why did they do it?
Get a blanket and get on the bus, right?
Yeah. And they did, the drummer was hospitalized with frostbite on his feet.
Yeah, there was no heat there at all. Susan, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with the final hour. We'll open up the phone lines. Here's a chance to talk with Susan Massino about rock ropes. We'll be back.